Welcome to iFormRx, where we explore the evidence that matters to ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, Editor-in-Chief of iFormRx. If you've been paying attention to the latest Centers of Disease Control and Prevention recommendations for adult vaccinations, you'll probably be aware that the new herpes zoster subunit vaccine is recommended for all adults over the age of 50. Every ambulatory care pharmacist should be involved in ensuring that every patient receives recommended vaccinations. But should we be recommending the new herpes zoster subunit vaccine to all of our patients who are older than 50? And what about the oldest old? Is this vaccine effective in patients who are in their 70s, their 80s, or even 90s? Well, here to tell us about the ZOE 50 and the ZOE 70 trials, which were published in the New England Journal of Medicine and formed the basis for the recent FDA approval and the CDC recommendations, is Dr. Catherine Montag-Schaefer from the University of Minnesota's Department of Family Medicine and Community Health and a clinical specialist at the Phelan Village Family Medicine Center in St. Paul, Minnesota. Dr. Montag-Schaefer wrote a commentary for iFormRx entitled "The ZOE Trials, the Herpes Zoster Recombinant Subunit Vaccine, It's Time to Upgrade." Catherine, welcome to the iFormRx podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Stuart.
So before we get started, Catherine, I want you to imagine you're seeing JL, a 52-year-old Caucasian man in the family medicine clinic today for a hypertension follow-up visit. The patient has a history of resistant hypertension, and you've been managing this patient's blood pressure medications for the past 8 months or so. The patient states that he's feeling great. He's been trying to be more physically active and eating better. He states that he's lost 5 pounds since his last visit with you, and his blood pressure readings at home have been much better since you added spironolactone to his regimen, which currently includes lisinopril, chlorothalidone, amlodipine, and spironolactone. Other than high blood pressure, the patient has no other chronic medical problems and only occasionally takes acetaminophen for tension headaches. He works as a grocery store manager and has long work hours. He has health insurance through his employer, which includes prescription drug coverage, but the copays are pretty high. His blood pressure measured by the nurse today was 126 over 74, and his heart rate was 74. When you measured his blood pressure, it was 122 over 70, and his pulse was 72 and regular. The patient weighs 213 pounds, and he has a BMI of 31.7. And given that his blood pressure is at goal, you actually don't plan to make any medication changes today. You decide to focus this visit on health maintenance issues. So I'm wondering what kinds of health maintenance issues should be discussed with JL. Obviously, adult vaccinations are one of the topics that should be included, but are there others?
Aside from adult vaccination recommendations by the CDC, according to the United States Preventive Services Task Force, there are a number of health maintenance recommendations for a man of his age. It is common for patients to have questions about these tests and screenings. I feel that ambulatory care and community pharmacists are a great resource to fill this gap and to also assist in overcoming any barriers that may arise. Our patient, JL, is eligible for colorectal cancer and depression screening. We should ask JL about alcohol and tobacco use to identify if any interventions are warranted. And finally, lab tests that could be recommended today for screening purposes include a one-time HIV infection screening, diabetes screening, and a lipid panel. Cholesterol screening will help us to understand JL's cardiovascular risk and if he would benefit from aspirin or statin therapy for primary prevention.
So in the commentary you wrote for iFormRx, you described the methods and the results of the ZOE 50 and the ZOE 70 studies. For those in our audience who have not read those papers, can you give us a brief synopsis?
The ZOE 50 and the ZOE 70 trials were co-occurring and identical in design. They enrolled individuals 50 years and older and 70 years and older. Participants were randomized to receive a two-dose series of either placebo or the intramuscular recombinant subunit vaccine. Investigators and participants were blinded to their intervention assignment. The main outcomes assessed included efficacy of the vaccine against the herpes zoster infection, associated complications, specifically postherpetic neuralgia, and vaccine safety. The vaccine was found to be 91 to 97% efficacious against a herpes zoster infection and 71 to 100% efficacious against postherpetic neuralgia when broken down by decade-specific age groups. While the vaccine had increased incidence of injection site reactions, namely pain, and systemic reactions, including myalgia and fatigue, all reactions were transient and did not greatly impact patients' willingness to complete the two-dose series. Serious adverse effects were comparable between the vaccine and placebo groups.
So tell us a little bit, Catherine, about what you believe to be the key strengths and limitations of these two studies. Are there any major sources of bias, potential confounders, or other threats to the internal validity of the studies?
I think that one of the main strengths of these trials was that they were forward-thinking and designed an entire trial specifically evaluating the intervention in an older population who is at greater risk of herpes zoster and its associated complications. This also helped to confirm that this vaccine would not have a similar pitfall as a live attenuated vaccine, that being age-dependent efficacy. The previous live attenuated herpes zoster vaccine was found to have decreased efficacy with increasing age. The ZOE trials proved that the new recombinant subunit vaccine was efficacious against herpes zoster across all age groups. Another strength was the number of participants. Between the two trials, they enrolled over 25,000 individuals. In regards to limitations, the findings of these trials represent a very selective group of patients, which limit its applicability to other populations. Eligible patients were herpes zoster vaccine naive, without a history of herpes zoster infection, and were immunocompetent. In addition, while the investigators had good intentions by enrolling patients from 18 countries, participants were largely European and white. There is a potential for bias, as the study was funded by the vaccine manufacturer. Finally, while these studies are ongoing, we currently only have a limited understanding of the duration of benefit afforded by the vaccine, as the studies were just over 3 years in length. This is namely a concern because the live attenuated vaccine was found to have a limited duration of protection, again, dependent on the age in which an individual was vaccinated. The live attenuated vaccine was found to have decreased efficacy only 1 year after vaccination and is estimated to wane to zero after 4 to 12 years. While the data provided by the ZOE trials is considered preliminary, currently there is no concern for loss of efficacy over time.
So, Catherine, many health maintenance plans and insurers don't pay for the zoster vaccination until a patient is at least 60 years of age. Do these studies support giving the zoster vaccine earlier as the CDC recommends? What are the pros and cons of vaccinating earlier rather than later? And if JL or any patient receives the zoster vaccination at, say, 52, will he need to be revaccinated at some point in the future?
The data provided by these studies, specifically the lack of waning efficacy over time, supports the CDC's recommendation for vaccinations starting at age 50. This provides protection against herpes zoster midlife and remains an intervention that will continue to benefit patients as they age into higher risk years. The advantage for vaccinating individuals of this age is that it will likely allow for clinics and health systems to be able to provide this intervention to patients. This is unlike the live attenuated vaccine, which had a target population that was largely Medicare eligible. Vaccination coverage for Medicare patients is complicated, as it is split between the Part B and the elective Part D benefit. Patients have a greater responsibility of the cost of vaccines covered by the Part D benefit. Because of the billing requirements for Part D vaccines, like the live attenuated vaccine, many clinics and health systems had to rely on community and retail pharmacies for vaccination as they lacked the infrastructure to obtain reimbursement for the vaccine and administration. While the recombinant subunit vaccine has also been chosen to be covered by Medicare Part D, the age difference between vaccine indication and typical Medicare eligibility allow for a much greater window for intervention. Currently, there is no recommendation for revaccination with the recombinant subunit vaccine. Due to the waning effect over time, the CDC does recommend, however, vaccination with the recombinant subunit vaccine for those patients who had previously obtained the live attenuated herpes zoster vaccine. While patients with a history of herpes zoster infection were excluded from these studies specifically, the CDC does recommend that they obtain vaccination if they are of eligible age, as herpes zoster infections can recur.
So, Catherine, I want to thank you for joining me today to discuss the herpes zoster subunit vaccine and the new CDC recommendations. It's clear from your comments that you believe that all eligible patients over the age of 50 who are immunocompetent should be receiving the herpes zoster subunit vaccine. And I think there's great opportunities here for pharmacists to get more involved in the vaccine delivery, and there's a larger window now for us to be able to provide this important vaccination to older adults. Well, tell us what you think. Should we be proactively offering the new herpes zoster subunit vaccine to all of our patients over the age of 50, even those who are previously vaccinated with Zostavax? Well, let us know what you think. Only iFormRx members can leave comments and use the interactive features on the site. You can become a member of iFormRx. It's free, so sign up today and check out our growing list of resource pages, which include links to key clinical trials, practice guidelines, and more, including immunizations. Until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFormRx, signing off.